Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Good afternoon. A lot going on, as always. Of course, right now we've got closing arguments in the impeachment trial, which I was just listening to. We're going to talk about that today. And actually, Representative Mike Johnson, my good buddy from Louisiana, who's been on Trump's defense team throughout this, is going to be calling in. He's going to call in on the third segment, so we'll talk to him at the bottom of the hour. So he'll be on about 4:32 Eastern time. So if you have a chance to join us, we'll get it straight from the lion's den with Representative Mike Johnson. But right now, we want to take an opportunity. Some friends at the Truth Network here in North Carolina let me know about an opportunity to talk to Dr. Cheryl Davis. She's the Senior Vice President of Medical Affairs, Chief Medical Officer at Scotland Memorial Hospital, which is in Laurinburg, North Carolina. She was on a webinar earlier today with the CDC about the coronavirus. So we wanted to take an opportunity to hear from an expert about this so we know a fact from fiction and we can understand what we need to be aware of. Dr. Cheryl Davis, thanks for calling in today. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are. So just kind of give us an update what we need to know about the coronavirus. Of course, with the internet and social media, this is getting spun up pretty good. And I want to make sure, as Christians, we're, you know, not given a spirit of fear, but of truth and love and a sound mind. So help us to have a sound mind when it comes to the coronavirus and what you've learned.
Yes, thank you. I think that's sound advice. You know, oftentimes whenever we hear, you know, that the World Health Organization has declared a public emergency, I'm sure that can incite fear in the public's eye. I do think that this is an ever-changing situation, and so you may hear one thing today and a different thing tomorrow. But I think that we can rely on the CDC website. And if you go to the CDC website, www.cdc.gov, you'll find that they explain a lot about the epidemiological situation and the spread and also the science behind coronavirus. And so what we know thus far is that there are about 10,000 cases worldwide. Most of them are in China, although there are cases that spread across 200 countries. And there have been about 200 deaths, and there are 6 confirmed cases in the U.S. And I think on the 27th or yesterday, they did confirm that there's one human-to-human transmission in the U.S. And so that means that a person of interest or a person under investigation in the U.S. transmitted it to another human. So most of these persons under investigation have traveled to China and have become actively symptomatic. And so therefore, they're being followed, quarantined, and one person has transmitted to another.
Yeah, and then we've got the situation because they, I think it was a chartered 747 or something, and they flew them back unbeknownst to them until they landed in California. Yeah. They've quarantined all of them for 2 weeks. And so you and I were talking by phone earlier, and that's obviously that's a wise thing to do. But in terms
absolutely.
Of panic and boy, should I start washing my hands more? We shouldn't be thinking like that at all at this point, should we?
No, I think, you know, there are some common things that, you know, I would probably boil these down to 5 things. The first thing is, do not travel to China unless you absolutely have to. And I don't know what other reason other than the death of a family member that could not be rearranged. So I would not travel to China. You know, the second thing is that just like the family of coronaviruses cause the common cold, and so they can be prevented by very simple things that we like to call standard precautions. If you have a cough, isolate yourself from your family. Wash your hands regularly. And if you do experience cough, fever, runny nose, those types of symptoms, most likely it is the common cold or the flu. Whenever you look at your actual risk of an average person living in the United States, it's going to be more accustomed to being exposed to the flu or the common cold rather than this strain of coronavirus.
Yeah, because the latest death toll just recently for North Carolina from the flu death was 54. And so that was the 2019-2020 season. We should be more worried about our flu shots and catching the flu than we should the coronavirus.
Yes, and you know, this is the flu season. This is the season for respiratory infections. And so most people are going to have cough, they're going to have fever, and they're going to have runny nose. Those are the three most common symptoms of the flu or a respiratory illness. So in order to minimize your risk, if you have not been vaccinated for the flu, I would get vaccinated as soon as possible. And then if you do exhibit these symptoms, then I would really kind of self-quarantine, which is a good thing to do anyway, so that you're not spreading disease at church, out in the public, work. Don't send your kids to school sick. Those are very common and basic rules of infection control. But if you have traveled to China in the last 14 days yourself, and you've either been to the Hubei province or the city of Wuhan, then you become symptomatic, then you know you have another issue on your hands. But those are a very small amount of people in this country. Just the average person has a higher risk of catching the flu than catching coronavirus.
And what was the general tone of the webinar with the CDC?
The general tone is that you know we are sending all these alerts because it's standard practice, but also it delineates resources, and we're able to issue travel warnings. And so they do not seem worried. I think the biggest risk is that if this virus is transmitted without being symptomatic, then it's really hard to monitor. But on the webinar, that was not mentioned at all. I think I saw on Fox News today that was a question. But they did not report on the webinar that this virus is being transmitted outside of showing symptoms. So if we are showing symptoms, therefore, then you can label persons investigation and then quarantine and do better control of the infection.
Yeah, because the worst case scenario is somebody can have it, actually be transmitting it to other people, but not show any symptoms. That way you have no idea what's going on and it's spreading and nobody can be aware.
Exactly, and then you cannot isolate.
Got it.
And really, there's no way to control it at that point.
Yeah, and so in terms of the shelf life of this being something that's a concern, how much longer do you think we'll be even talking about the coronavirus, assuming it doesn't kind of take off?
Typically the incubation period of this virus is 14 days. And so once we've issued the travel warning and that you limit, you know, that's the issue that makes us so global is international travel. And so if you can limit the international travel, then I would think that we would probably see this another 2 to 3 weeks. If we are only transmitting the virus by symptomatology.
Right, got it.
You know, if it's transmitting outside of that, it could be different.
Yeah, it's a different game. We'll keep watching that. Dr. Cheryl Davis, Senior Vice President, Medical Affairs, and the Chief Medical Officer, Scotland Memorial. Thank you so much for calling in today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome. Talk to you again soon. All right, friends, important information. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. So, on the heels of hearing from Dr. Cheryl Davis, if you've been stockpiling food and stuff because of the coronavirus, you can stop. You want to stockpile some food for a Super Bowl Sunday, that's fine. Go ahead. But when it comes to the coronavirus, we should be more concerned about the flu, and the flu's killed 54 people in flu season here in North Carolina, so we should be much more concerned about that than the coronavirus. But, you know, there's all kinds of news outlets and social media, and isn't it easy to get caught up in that? I mean, I've had some times in the last 7 days going, oh, coronavirus, wow, I mean. And I just watched the movie Contagion the other day. So I'm like, oh, what's R naught numbers, and how quickly does it reproduce? And are people asymptomatic? They don't show symptoms, but yet they're carrying it, and they're giving it to other people without having any symptoms, so you don't know, and all that kind of stuff. But like I said at the beginning of that time with Dr. Davis, we being Christians have not been given a spirit of fear, but a love, power, and a sound mind. Let's remember that. But it's important to have that information, so I appreciate Dr. Cheryl Davis calling in and helping us out with that. Okay, right now, literally in the middle of closing arguments. So like, you hear that?
Why, that was saved for a book.
Okay, that's Adam Schiff. They're doing closing arguments in the Senate before they vote, before they take the vote on, do they want witnesses? So it's been the same old going on. The interesting thing about what's happening in the Senate is you finally heard from Trump's side. So they've been making their vigorous defense, and Nadler and Schiff and their other six members of the House Managers Party basically doing the same thing over and over again. And then what's wild about this, and they're going to take this vote. Okay, here's what's going to go down. They're going to take the vote pretty soon on hearing other witnesses. And of course, what the alleged things in Bolton's book, John Bolton's book, this came out that and the New York Times is continuing to put this stuff out. They just did another one earlier today. That all of a sudden, ooh, somebody reading through Bolton's book, they got a copy of it somehow because it's not released yet. But now it's for presale. How convenient for John Bolton. That's a pretty good ad campaign, right? Pretty good marketing campaign. Now they're saying, oh, well, actually, there was a meeting where a bunch of guys were in the room. And Mr. Trump gave the instruction, Mr. Bolton wrote during an Oval Office conversation in early May, I'm reading from the New York Times, that included the acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, the president's personal lawyer Rudolph Giuliani, and the White House counsel Pat Cipollone, who's now leading the president's impeachment defense. So now they're saying, oh, Bolton said that they were all in the room when he made it perfectly obvious that this was going on and this is what we wanted to do. So Trump responded, of course, I never instructed John Bolton to set up a meeting for Rudy Giuliani, one of the greatest corruption fighters in America and by far the greatest mayor in the history of New York City, to meet with President Zelensky. That meeting never happened. Giuliani denied the conversation took place, said it's absolutely uncategorically true. And so they asked, New York Times asked Mr. Bolton and a representative from Mr. Mulvaney for comments, and neither one of them replied. So now Schiff and Nadler et al. Are saying, oh, see, Bolton. Well, listen, if Bolton is the patriot that a lot of people think he is, then you'd think he would have stepped up to a mic already sometime in the last 3 months and said, I have information that I need to share. Because you're not getting the full story in the House. You guys aren't hearing it. And because I love America so much, I have got to share this. And then he comes right out and he does it. Nobody's stopping him from doing that. He could do it, but he hasn't. So there's that. So they're trying to keep saying, oh, we need to bring John Bolton. So that's what they've been arguing about. Witnesses, no more witnesses. So what was at stake for Mitch McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate, was... Okay, I might lose these four senators. If he loses, Lamar Alexander was on the fence about witnesses. Susan Murkowski, Mitt Romney, and Susan Collins. Then he goes from 53 to 47 to 49 to 51. And now they're going to call witnesses. And then that would have been crazy because they would have been going after Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and the whistleblower. And this on and on and on and on and on it goes. So that's what was Mitch McConnell's been dealing with during the week. Romney confirmed he was going to vote yes on witnesses, so he'll vote yes on witnesses this afternoon, okay? And then Susan Collins confirmed, yes, I'm going to vote for more witnesses. So all of a sudden, Mitch McConnell's gone from 53-47 to 51-49. Problem, right? So what about Lamar Alexander and what about Susan Murkowski, who also were kind of targeted as being, they might vote for witnesses. So Mitch McConnell's been walking that fine line all week. Well, Lamar Alexander came out last night. No, I don't want further witnesses. And Susan Murkowski came out this morning saying, no, I don't want further witnesses. Here's what she said. And you got to, there's a lot going on here when they're speaking, okay? Because she's not a big Trump person. She's a very liberal Republican. Given the partisan nature, this is a direct quote, of this impeachment from the very beginning and throughout, I have come to the conclusion that there will be no fair trial in the Senate. I don't believe the continuation of this process will change anything. It's sad for me to admit that as an institution, the Congress has failed. So she's from Alaska. That's what she said. After keeping her views close to the vest, issued her statement just as what could be the final day of proceedings got underway. In it, she said she carefully considered the question of allowing witnesses, but, quote, ultimately decided that I will vote against considering motions to subpoena. She even seemed to take a swipe at Senator Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts for a day earlier, applying not so subtle pressure on Chief Justice John Roberts to side with those seeking witnesses on the floor Thursday. Warren gave Roberts a question that asked if refusing to allow witnesses would, quote, contribute to the loss of legitimacy of the Chief Justice, the Supreme Court, and the Constitution. So that's Elizabeth Warren saying, hey, if we don't get witnesses, I think we should call your character into question here, Mr. Chief Justice. Murkowski said in her statement, quote, it has also become clear some of my colleagues, she's obviously referring to Elizabeth Warren, intend to further politicize this process and drag the Supreme Court into the fray while attacking the Chief Justice. I will not stand for nor support that effort. We've already degraded this institution for partisan political benefit, and I will not enable those who wish to pull down another. So she's voting no. Lamar Alexander voting no. Mitch McConnell only lost Mitt Romney. No joke there and no surprise there because Mitt hates Trump. And Susan Collins. So this is going to go down 51-49. They'll vote no more witnesses. Now the only question left is, will they vote to convict or acquit tonight, or will they do it tomorrow? Because this is a loaded deck. Because the State of the Union address is Tuesday night, which actually, as a reminder, Bill Clinton actually gave a State of the Union address while he was being impeached during that process. So it's not unprecedented, but it's highly unusual, obviously. So the State of the Union is Tuesday night, and the Iowa caucus is Monday night. So talk about a pregnant moment in history here in the country. So will they do it? Will they not? How soon will they vote to acquit or find guilty? They're obviously not going to find him guilty. They're going to acquit him. Now, whether it's 51-49 or 52, if they get a couple of Democrats, that'll be fascinating. That would really help the Republicans if they get a couple of Democrats that vote to acquit, because then they can say, hey, your impeachment process was totally partisan, but the acquittal was bipartisan. That would be a huge win for the Republicans. I don't know that we're going to see that. There's a couple of Democrats that are on the hook because they're living in districts and they're up for reelection as senators, where Trump's doing pretty well and did well in the past. So they're playing some pretty high stakes poker over there. We're going to talk to Representative Mike Johnson coming out of the break from Louisiana. A good buddy of mine. We've been friends since about 2005. A great godly man, one of the greatest minds in Congress, especially when it comes to religious liberty. But he's also been on President Trump's defense team. So he's going to be calling in a few minutes. We're going to talk to him after the break and get his frontline expert opinion on everything going on. And then we'll continue to take it from there. Whether you like Trump or hate him, whether you like impeachment or hate it, let's make sure we're continuing to pray for all those in authority over us, whether it's Donald Trump or Adam Schiff or Jerry Nadler or Nancy Pelosi. We need to keep praying for these folks, obviously. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. We'll pick it up with Representative Mike Johnson on the other side of the break. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Now going directly to the front lines with our good friend, Representative Mike Johnson from Louisiana, who has been, I was just saying off the break, Mike, thanks for calling in, that you've been, from my perspective, you've been in kind of this political hell for a while, sitting on Nadler's committee and having to go through all this stuff, and now on the front lines being a part of Trump's defense team. But at least you got to go see your LSU win the national championship. So congratulations for that.
Well, there was that. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't get better than that as an LSU grad. I'm double alum, as you know, Steve. I was undergrad and law school at LSU, so I got to go on Air Force One with the president and the first lady to the national championship. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
No, that was a nice little break as you were in the middle of this craziness.
Yes.
Okay, so right now they're in the Senate. They're doing their closing arguments before they vote on, are we going to hear witnesses? Obviously, that it's been cleared up today that it's not going to go their way. But I'm going to play a clip after we're done, because you probably saw this Nancy Pelosi yesterday in her press conference saying, hey, this won't be an acquittal. So they're already throwing the whole thing under the bus because it's not going their way. So what should we expect from this point? And what have you thought of what's gone on in the Senate with finally being able to make a defense of the president?
Well, look, we were grateful to finally put on the president's case. This had been a one-sided fight all along, all through the fall. And the president finally got to put the truth out there. You know, a lot of the public tuned out because they frankly got bored with the legal proceedings, as we anticipated. But it was gratifying at least to put our the truth, the facts out there. And, you know, I made the point several times, and I think I've done, I don't know, 50 interviews, you know, in the last 2 weeks, you know, because we're out in the court and the court of public opinion trying to present the president's case and explain why this whole thing really and truly is a sham. But I've said, you know, I before I got to Congress, I litigated cases in federal court, high-profile constitutional law cases. You were in the trenches with me for some of that, for 20 years. And in all of that time, I never had a case that was so one-sided as this one. I mean, we had the facts and the law on the side of the president. And, of course, the Constitution directly speaks to the fact that everything that they've alleged and accused and manufactured against him is not impeachable offenses. He ought to be acquitted by tonight, and we hope that'll happen.
Yeah, it's been fascinating to listen to some of these closing arguments today, because in their plea for more witnesses and more paperwork, yet when they first started in the Senate, they're talking about, this is so obvious, the facts are in, he's guilty on both charges, this couldn't be any clearer, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden, they're saying, well, no, we actually need more witnesses to make our case. So I was like, well, which is it, sir? Have you made your case or have you not? Is this just Trump derangement syndrome? Is that all this is, that they hate the man so much, they know they can't beat him in the election most likely, so they wrote this book a long time ago. They wrote The End. We impeached him. You hear Nancy Pelosi saying he's impeached forever with a big smile on her face handing out pens. What's your read on it? You've been up there. You know these people. You work with them every day. How should we, quote-unquote, judge them in all of this?
Well, you've made a lot of excellent points there. This has been a hyper-partisan, fraudulent process from the get-go. And you have to remember, and we can't remind everyone of this too often, that before July 25th of last year, okay, which was the fateful phone call between President Trump and President Zelensky of Ukraine, which is supposedly the crux of this whole thing, before that ever happened, 95 House Democrats had already voted to impeach Donald Trump, okay, before these events ever took place.
Right.
I'm on the House Judiciary Committee. That's Nadler's committee, as you mentioned a moment ago. That's the committee that actually has jurisdiction over an impeachment proceeding. There are 24 Democrats who serve on that committee with me. 17 out of the 24 had already voted to impeach Donald Trump before we began any hearings on this phone call. So the whole thing was exactly what you said, Steve. It was a predetermined political outcome. They promised to their radical, increasingly leftist base that they would impeach Donald Trump by Christmas. So they put this thing on fast forward. And there's only a couple of precedents for this in all of American history. There's a reason that impeachment is so exceedingly rare. Everybody knows now it was Andrew Johnson in the 1860s. Nixon never got to this point because he resigned first. And then you have Clinton in 98-99, right? In each of those cases, the president that was impeached had committed clearly criminal statutes, criminal right. violations. They were backed up by mounds of evidence, and everybody knew it. That is not the case here. And the reason they had to fast forward and violate the president's due process and had all the secret, super secret hearings in the basement and engineered and cherry-picked the facts to put out there to advance their narrative, because they knew they had nothing on Donald Trump. They don't like him. That's why we're here. But unfortunately for them, in our constitutional system, the elected representatives of Congress do not get to reverse the results of an election because they don't like the guy that won. And that's all this is.
Right. Impeachment was never meant to be a political process. Our founding fathers were very aware of that. That's why the bar is put at high crimes and misdemeanors, let alone the fact that you need 66 votes in the Senate. So it, by definition, if it's not bipartisan, by definition, it's not a valid impeachment. And I've been saying it this way on the air, Mike, and this, you know this already. I'm like, listen, okay, you guys, I have like 88 students right now. I have the radio audience and stuff. I have a great relationship with them. They love me. They think highly of me, maybe. But one day you find out that there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that I'm running a child prostitution ring in China and I have a meth lab in my house. Then all of a sudden everybody's going, oh man, that's heartbreaking. I really hate to hear that. But yeah, Steve should face the law and Steve should go to jail because it's obvious that this is a problem. We love him, but he's got to go. And that would be a regular case for what impeachment is supposed to be. Am I right on that?
No, that's exactly right. So look, the founders put in Article 2, Section 4, the very clear language. Anybody can pull it up on their smartphone right now. What does it take to impeach a president? You have to have treason, bribery, or a high crime or misdemeanor. And as Professor Dershowitz explained very well on the Senate floor this week, what they meant by that, if you go look at the Federalist Papers and the deliberations of the Constitutional Convention, what they meant by that was high crime and misdemeanor was something on par with treason or bribery. It had to be something like that, the most heinous of crimes against the state itself, right? Well, because they couldn't find any evidence of anything like that, what these Democrats did is they pulled the trigger in a way that no previous Congress has ever been willing to do. Now, you know, every single president, Steve, has made decisions that were unpopular by the opposing party.
Sure.
I mean, every president since George Washington has been accused of what the founders called maladministration or abuse of their power in some respect. They all would have been kicked out of office under the standard that's being advanced here this afternoon, because if you can just decide as the opposing party, just a single party can get together and say, you know what, we don't like the way that guy's having phone calls. We don't like his policy decision. We don't like this or that. We don't like the way he tweets. Let's get rid of him. That standard is so low, they have now weaponized the impeachment provision of the Constitution. It's exactly what the founders warned against.
And it will definitely come back. And I'm not going to sit here and ever say that the Republican Party lacks human depravity and would never sin, because now anybody can use it. The Republicans can follow that precedent, as well as obviously the Democrats. So from this point on, we have a couple minutes left. From this point on, Nancy Pelosi's already signaled she's going to come out and say this isn't an acquittal. It's just another sham. It's another cover up. All the Republicans in the Senate, it's just a cover up. So how does the Republican Party deal with this going forward after the acquittal's done? Maybe tonight, but I guess it could be tomorrow or Monday at the latest. But what do you do after that?
Well, we have to go out and as often as we can in every venue and every lion's den, share the facts, the law, and the truth, and hope that it cuts through the mainstream media that is helping Nancy Pelosi advance and Schumer and company advance that crazy, you know, whiner's narrative. I mean, the whole thing was flawed. They knew they didn't have valid articles. Everybody sort of knew how this was going to come out in the end, and they did it anyway. Why, everyone says? Because they have hope beyond hope that they can damage Donald Trump enough. If they can't reverse the election of last time, if they can't erase the votes of 63 million Americans, maybe, just maybe, they can prevent him from being reelected. I don't think it's going to work, Steve. I think it's going to backfire on him. I think the size of that crowd in New Jersey a couple of nights ago was a good indication. Look, the people are sick of this. They know that Donald Trump's been railroaded, and I think they're going to reward him for all of the results of his administration this fall.
Yeah, I agree with that. Representative Mike Johnson from the great state of Louisiana, as always, thank you, my brother, for calling in. God bless you. Thanks for all your work up there.
Hey, you too, brother. Talk to you soon.
All right, pal. Talk to you. See you. That was Representative Mike Johnson. And in case you couldn't tell, Mike and I have known each other for a long time, but he's right in the middle of it all. He's one of the few people that I trust up there implicitly. Very, very godly man, and has been incredible. He used to be one of the top attorneys at Alliance Defending Freedom. And then he helped to start a law school. And then the gentleman that was in the district that he now represents from Louisiana stepped down. They had a special election. Mike won, overwhelmingly won re-election again 2 years ago, and will continue to win because he's just that good. And you can tell that, and he's done he's done so many interviews over the years. We did on work together on several things here in North Carolina. And he's just he's the real deal, just a gem, just a huge blessing that we have somebody like that up there, and somebody like that that we can get on the show every once in a while. And that's the deal. But here's what's going to happen, and I'll keep talking about it after the break, because you got to hear the Nancy Pelosi press conference from yesterday, when she's just saying it's not an acquittal. That's what they're going to do. Not an acquittal, not acquitted. That'll be their phrase between now and the election. And then, assuming Donald Trump wins, and I think he will win in the fall, short of anything crazy happening between now and then they're going to say his re-election's illegitimate. They already put that feeler out there just in the last week, that he's corrupting everything. And then we're not going to be able to trust the results of the election this fall because he's messing around with foreign governments. Jerry Nadler was saying that. And hopefully the American people will continue to see these folks for the crazy middle schoolers that they are. It's just amazing. That's why we need to be in prayer for all of them. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. We'll hear from Nancy Pelosi from her comments yesterday when we come back. 'Cause you are more than I could ever dream. This world could ever see. Welcome back. I'm keeping an eye on C-SPAN. I couldn't stand the commentary from CBS, NBC, Huffington Post. All those guys are carrying it live, but they're also doing commentary, and there's only so much I can take. And so right now, they've done their closing arguments on the question about hearing additional witnesses, and so then they're going to take the vote. Do we want to hear additional witnesses? Which looks like it's going to go 51-49 for the Republicans, which means no additional witnesses. We're done with all of that. And then the only question left is, when do we do the actual vote to find the president guilty on one or two of the impeachment charges, or do we acquit him? And so that will be next. Will they do it tonight? If not tonight, I think they'll certainly do it tomorrow. Because remember, Monday is the Iowa caucus, and then Tuesday is the State of the Union address. I asked all my students yesterday, and then I'm going to play Nancy Pelosi here for you so I can try to ruin your afternoon a little bit. I asked all my students yesterday, and on Wednesday, my Constitution Civics students, do you think Donald Trump will go after the Democrats during the State of the Union address on the impeachment question? And it was about 90% to 10. 90-10 said yes, he's definitely going to go after him. So this is going to be some must-see TV on Tuesday night. But yesterday, Nancy Pelosi doing a big press conference about various things, but she was asked and got into it about the impeachment and about Trump and with this acquittal. And this is exactly the way this is going to go. So I'm going to play it for you. So you can be prepared for what's going to start happening as soon as they vote to acquit the president. Okay, this is what's going to happen. This is, get used to this. Get used to this song, because you're going to hear it from now until November. And then in November, assuming Trump wins, then you're going to hear, we don't even know if this is a legitimate win. All of that's very, very dangerous for the country itself. Nancy Pelosi yesterday at the House of Representatives in a press conference.
When this is over, do you think that President Trump will be chastened and understand that he's got a Congress watching him? Or will he be emboldened because the Senate will have acquitted him?
Well, he will not be acquitted. You cannot be acquitted if you don't have a trial. And you don't have a trial if you don't have witnesses and documentation and that. I would hope that the senators, if it comes to a tie, or if there's a question of hearing testimony or receiving documents, would leave it up to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Republican appointed in a Republican majority court, I would think that they would have confidence in the Chief Justice of the United States. That's really his title. And that's interesting to me that they're afraid of breaking a tie with the Chief Justice of the United States. Does the president know right from wrong? I don't think so.
All right, there you go. So that's what you're going to hear. It's an acquittal on both charges, both impeachment charges, in the Senate when they vote. Could be tonight, no later than tomorrow. So they'll vote to acquit. And then Nancy Pelosi and Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff and all the rest of them will say it's not an acquittal. Because like Nancy was saying, if there's no witnesses, then how can that be a trial? And if you don't have a trial, you can't really acquit somebody. However, like I said earlier, and this is what Representative Mike Johnson was talking about, in the House, that's your trial. Gather all your information, present all your evidence. That's like the grand jury that's hearing all the evidence. In this case, it's not the exact same thing as the jury system and the legal system because it's an impeachment. It's different. And Congress is not the judicial branch, although sometimes they certainly look like it, sound like it, act like it. But in this case, impeachment doesn't run like a regular trial. And even when they were trying to, when they were down in the basement, and when Representative Johnson, when Mike said that, on his call just a little while ago, he's saying down those secret meetings down in the basement of the Capitol. I know that sounds like hyperbole, but it isn't. They had those meetings behind closed doors in the basement of Congress. And then certain witnesses, well, they're like, you can't bring an attorney with you. And they only got the witnesses they want. The Republicans didn't get any witnesses they wanted. So it was all totally one-sided. And that's where all the information was presented, which is when he comes over to the Senate and Nadler and Schiff and the other six people on the management team coming over from the House with the articles of impeachment said time and time again, when Jay Sekulow was presenting closing arguments earlier, he was like 31 times they said it's ironclad, 27 times they said, and this was all in the Senate proceedings, okay? They said over and over again, this is an ironclad case, it's open and shut, all the evidence is against him. This is obvious. He's guilty. Now they're saying, "Oh, we need more witnesses because we can't prove our case." And then because that's the implication, right? If it's an ironclad case, then why would you need more witnesses? Hey, once you get across the touchdown, you don't need to run back out to the five and then run back in to say, "Hey, look, we got a touchdown." No, you either got a touchdown or you didn't. They made their case already. They had their witnesses. They got their information. But now they know it's not going their way. Plus, this is all theater at this point. They know they're going to lose in the Senate. They knew they were going to lose in the first place. But they had to get the guy impeached by Christmas, you know, so they could go home and celebrate. And then he's impeached forever. Remember when Nancy Pelosi said that? He's impeached forever. So we're going to, if we can't beat him, then we're at least going to sting him and we're going to stain his record. So he'll be the only third president in the history of the country who's been impeached. That's Donald Trump. We impeached you. Get it? See how this all works? And so that's what's going on here. I want to play this one more time because there's a couple little things in here you got to pay attention to learn from constitutionally, okay, as we try to understand the country. Not from the right, not from the left, but from the constitutional perspective, which is the basis of the country in the first place. So this is, again, Nancy Pelosi. Just a couple things in here I want to stop on and unpack a little bit for all of our good, okay? Check this out. Nancy Pelosi again yesterday.
When this is over, do you think that President Trump will be chastened and understand that he's got a Congress watching him? Or will he be emboldened because the Senate will have acquitted him?
Well, he will not be acquitted. You cannot be acquitted if you don't have a trial.
You cannot be acquitted if you don't have a trial. This is the trial. They're the jury. You've already presented the evidence. They're making a decision based on the evidence. You had a chance to go back over your evidence. All of that was presented already. Because once the jury's in deliberation, they don't come out and go, you know what a jury can do? We want to replay the testimony from so-and-so. We want to look at the transcript again. We want to look at that information again that was entered into as evidence. They can do that. But they're not going to go back. Once they adjourn, they're not going back into the courtroom to bring additional witnesses. So when it goes into the jury deliberation, that's what happens in the Senate. Deliberation based on the evidence presented. Okay? So she's saying, well, that's not an acquittal. She's all political here. They're not dealing with the judicial system or the impeachment process. This is 100% political.
You don't have a trial if you don't have witnesses and documentation.
You had that already.
And that. I would hope that the senators,
now
if
watch
it comes
this.
To a tie, or if there's a question of hearing testimony or receiving documents, would leave it up to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Republican appointed.
Okay, why did she say that? Republican appointed. So she can continue to throw the entire Republican Party under the bus. And then she's going to throw John Roberts under the bus because he was Republican appointed. Okay, she's adding John Roberts to the game here.
In a Republican majority court, I would think that they would have confidence in the Chief Justice.
He's your guy. Why won't you let him vote? He's your guy. If we get a tie, why won't you let him vote? He's your guy. In a Republican-controlled body here, the Senate. So the Republicans are complicit with the cover-up of President Trump. That's the narrative, okay? And she's going to play that bad boy. They're going to play that song over and over and over again.
Of the United States. That's really his title. And that's interesting to me that they're afraid of breaking a tie with the Chief Justice of the United States. Does the president know right from wrong? I don't think so.
She had to get that one in there. Okay, again, I'm watching live on my phone. I'm watching C-SPAN. They did their closing arguments about the vote to hear additional witnesses. Okay, they did that already. Now they're all just walking around, clamoring around. Chief Justice John Roberts is not in his seat, so they're on a little break or whatever they're doing. Then when they come back in, they should vote. And the first vote they're going to take is, do we want to hear additional witnesses? Lamar Alexander came out last night. He was on the fence. He's voting no. Susan Murkowski came out this morning. She's voting no. Mitt Romney, no shock, who hates Trump, is voting yes. As a Republican, yes, I want to hear additional witnesses. So is Susan Collins. So the vote's going to go 51-49. We won't hear more witnesses. Then they'll either do it tonight or they'll do it tomorrow. And they'll vote to find guilty or acquit. And they're going to acquit him. And then we've got Trump. Talk about, so he was in New Jersey. Representative Johnson mentioned that because they had like 130,000 people sign up for tickets. And then last night he was in Des Moines, Iowa. And Monday night, he knows the theater game. He's brilliant when it comes to all of that. The media stuff and how to play the game and taking advantage of Twitter. I don't like the way he communicates. I don't like the way he treats some people. I don't like the way he talks about some people. And there's been some things about his administration that I disagree with. I'm largely in support. Largely think as the administration has done a great job, and I've been pleasantly surprised. But he knows how to play the game, the media game. Oh my goodness, it's crazy to watch it. So remember, he was in Iowa last night. The Iowa caucus is Monday. The State of the Union address is Tuesday night. And what do you think? Do you think he's going to open up in the State of the Union address? Because he's going to be facing all of his accusers for the first time in terms of people in the House and the Senate all together. And talk about a lopsided night. And will the Democrats stand up or clap for anything? I mean, this is going to be some incredible political theater coming up on Tuesday night. So you can bet your bottom dollar that I'll be watching it. I'll be all over that Tuesday night. And giving all of my students extra credit for watching it and writing up a little paper, what they agree with, what they didn't agree with. But this is pretty amazing. But as frustrating as it is, as maddening as it is, please remember, 1 Timothy chapter 2 calls for us to pray for those in authority over us. So what website I want you to go to, do it as soon as I finish talking. Pray1tim2.org. Pray1tim2.org. We'll pull up, if you're here in North Carolina, wherever you're at, we'll pull up a map, pick your state, sign up in your with the email, and you'll get an email every day from our friends at Capital Commission that will give you people, representatives from your state to pray for. and help us all do what the Lord has commanded us to do, to pray for those in authority over us. If you're on Facebook Live, we'll do exactly that, especially about the impeachment trial as soon as we're done with the radio show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for being here. And like my dad always said, ever forward.